Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Donovan Sunshine Superman.
Okay.
All right. I don't know a whole lot of his stuff. Certainly know who he is. Okay. Well, here's what it says on allmusic.com. It says, paced by the title track, one of Donovan's best singles, 1966's Sunshine Superman, heralded the coming psychedelic age with a new world / old world bent. Several ambitious psychedelic productions and a raft of wistful folk songs. Producer Mickey Most fashioned a new sound for the Scottish folk singer, a sparse, swinging, bass-heavy style, perfectly complementing Donovan's enigmatic lyrics and delightfully skewed beatnik delivery. The two side openers, Sunshine Superman and Season of the Witch, are easily the highlights of the album. The first is the quintessential bright summer sing-along, the second a chugging Eve of Destruction tale. The rest of Sunshine Superman is filled with lengthy, abstract, repetitive folk jams, perfect for lazy summer afternoons. But more problematic when close attention is paid. Accompanied by acoustic guitar and a chamber quartet, the second track, Legend of a Girl Child Linda, plods on for nearly 7 minutes. Donovan's hippy-dippy delivery rendering lace into lays. After that notable low point, he performs much better, tingling a few spines with his enunciation on the ancient-sounding folk songs Guinevere, Three Kingfishers, and Ferris Wheel. Elsewhere, he salutes the Jefferson Airplane on The Fat Angel and fellow British folky Bert Jansch on Bert's Blues. Donovan's songs are quite solid, but Mickey Most's insistence on extroverted productions, it would grow even more pronounced with time, resulted in a collection of songs that sound good on their own but aren't very comfortable in context.
Okay.
All right. Sort of a mixed review, I suppose.
I guess so.
Okay, so this album was released on the 26th of August, 1966. Genres are psychedelia, folk, psychedelic rock, or psychedelic folk, and raga rock. Label is Epic Records and produced by Mickey Most. And there's 10 songs on the album, and it's split evenly between side one and side two, five and five. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, I've linked the album in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music. So if you're listening along with us, we'll take a break between after side one. And so that starts with the title track, Sunshine Superman, and ends with Bert's Blues. So if you want to pause there, and we'll discuss halfway through. All right, so here is the first song on the album, which is also the title track, Sunshine Superman. Here we go. All right, and ending side one with Bert's Blues, apparently a song about Bert Jansch. This is interesting. I'm not sure I'm quite into it.
Okay.
One of the things that's bothering me, and it's a little nitpicky, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but a lot of the songs don't seem to have a proper ending. They just kind of stop.
I hadn't actually noticed that, but it's I did think that Ferris Wheel sort of dragged a bit. I thought that one was a little bit, I don't know, a little more repetitive than it needed to be. I thought it needed a little bit more of a some other part to it, and even the main hook of it wasn't really all that hooky. It was just kind of whatever. I like the use of like sitars and stuff like this in the album. I think it's actually kind of cool. But yeah, I thought Three Kingfishers was pretty cool. I think that song is superior to the other ones on here. Bert's Blues is all right.
Yeah, that was okay. Yeah. Yeah, Legend of a Girl Child Linda. I think that dragged on a little bit too. Just the length of it and but also not that's not the only reason. It just kind of that one didn't really grab me that much. But it's interesting hearing because I know he was really close with the Beatles. And it's funny, as you mentioned that I think the use of the sitar was directly influenced by them because they, I think it was Rubber Soul was the first time, I think it was on Norwegian Wood was the first time a sitar had been used on a pop song. And, you know, so I think that was sort of influenced by that. But yeah, it is interesting. It is. I do like that. It's sort of a snapshot of like where the psychedelic pop music was at the time. Cause, and this is pretty early in like, this is like in the summer of 66. Yeah. So,
I think this might even predate, the, 13th Floor Elevators album. I'm not sure about that, but I think it does.
Okay. Yeah. And the Beatles put out Revolver, I think August 66. I think it was the same month. Might have been the same day, but the same month for sure. It is fascinating. And I think I've mentioned this before. It is fascinating watching the like 66, 67. It's almost like a switch was flipped. And I think part of it too was color TV was becoming more common and the sort of like the world was kind of waking up. And in my mind, because I wasn't around, in my mind, everything before 1965 is sort of black and white because I'm just watching the footage and it's like, I know it really wasn't, but that's the way it kind of, that's how I picture it in my mind.
When I think back to things like that, my imagination's pretty vivid in color and stuff like that. So even, you know, the 50s and the 40s are still in their full color. But I sort of understand what you mean because, movies were still in full color and stuff like that, come certainly by the 50s. Black and white was still pretty much, right. Almost right up to the end of the 60s, black and white was still like pretty much the norm, even into the 70s for some people. But
actually, it's funny. I was listening to Conan O'Brien's podcast, and apparently his parents were not very frivolous, and he said he didn't have color TV until 1977. Which was pretty late, and he was talking about how watching Star Trek and going to a friend's house and watching it, and it blew his mind because he didn't realize that the shirts were different colors,
right?
Color TV was it had been around since the 50s, but you know, things weren't really shot in color all that often.
No, the technology goes back to the 50s, but it wasn't widely available until sometime in the late 60s.
Yeah. And so like in my mind, I think because of that, and because I'm watching a lot of footage of the early 60s and then the later 60s, a lot of it is in color. And then the early 60s, a lot of it is in black and white. it's almost like two different worlds. It's almost like, you know, I talking about the Beatles and obviously from Revolver to Sgt. Pepper, their look had changed quite a bit. And it almost feels like they're a completely different band. And that, I know that's the point of Sgt. Pepper. It's almost like everything changed all of a sudden. I know it didn't really, because they'd already been experimenting on Revolver, and you know, Donovan put this out in 66, and so things were starting to happen, but you know, it is interesting watching like the styles, like the hairstyles and the clothing just change almost like, did you ever see that movie Pleasantville?
Pleasantville. Not sure. The name rings a bell, but I'm not sure I saw it.
Well, it's about, it's kind of a weird movie. It's sort of a science fiction kind of thing. And it's about, these teenagers, and they're watching, there's this old show from the 60s called Pleasantville, and it's like a typical, you know, family sitcom, and you know, the situations aren't very dramatic, and it all, you know, wraps up at the end of the episode. And but they actually go into the world where the episode takes place, and they actually start to tell the characters about like the modern world and different way of thinking, and everything's black and white. And as the characters are sort of, you know, being exposed to this more modern way of thinking, everything slowly starts to change to color. It's a very weird film, but it's interesting. And it's sort of like, it's almost like how I see the 60s really.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I think this album is certainly sort of making me think of stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sunshine Superman was like, they weren't kidding when they said that it was probably the highlight of this side of the album. It probably is. And it's very psychedelic. It's very definitely, of that genre. The reason I brought up the 13th Floor Elevators is because they had sort of like coined the term psychedelic. At least that's how the legend goes. I don't know exactly how true it is or anything like that. I mean, the term actually kind of goes back, but as opposed to actually being applied to music, I think it was them who sort of applied the term. And I'm not 100% sure when the album came out. It might have come out before this, might have come out after. I can't remember. But I know it was 66.
Yeah, it was after this. It was in October.
October 1966.
Yeah, this came out in August.
August.
So, yeah, two months later, yeah.
It does predate it. Okay. See, that's what I was wondering. This is a very interesting snapshot. Like, and how you were sort of describing how everything sort of, you know, became sort of colorized around this time, you know, and sort of a, maybe not necessarily literally, but when the psychedelic era came in, it was sort of like, it sort of ushered in sort of, you know, people were starting to question the status quo at the time, and realizing that the things the way they are were not necessarily the way the things had to be, you know, depending on who you are, it could be for better or worse, but I think for a lot of things it was for the better. They went through some, you know, tough, you know, learning curves, you know, to get there, but there was a lot of, you know, turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Especially in 68.
Yeah, 68 was a bummer year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. But I never really thought of it that way, but it is sort of interesting how like the psychedelic era sort of, you know, coincides with the, you know, the introduction of color TV and the way that people were starting to think at the time and everything like that. And that movie that you described, Pleasantville, sort of, you know, encapsulates all of that and sort of, you know, illustrates it a little bit. I thought that was that's definitely interesting. I definitely think I want to see this movie. I don't think I've seen it at all. So
it's worth watching. It's interesting. Yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll get into the second side of the Av, and it starts off with another hit that he had, Season of the Witch. So here we go. Okay, and ending the album with Celeste. I think I enjoyed the second half more than the first.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it seemed to pick up a little bit, and the song seemed a little bit more filled out.
Yeah, I mean he's got a unique voice, that's for sure. And he's a very unique songwriter as well. I was just listening to some of the lyrics, and you know, it's the first half kind of reminded me a little bit. It was a little kind of reminded me of Spinal Tap doing Stonehenge in in the lyrics. It was that sort of fairy tale kind of medieval sort of thing. But you know, I think he's a unique. I don't think there's really anybody quite like him.
No, I can't think of anybody who really was quite like him. I mean, there were other folk singers from his area and whatnot, but he embraced the psychedelic thing better than a lot of other folk singers did.
That's for sure.
It just blended well with his style.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, he's a unique guitar player too. Apparently, he actually taught. He went to India with the Beatles, and while they were there, he taught John Lennon and Paul McCartney the finger picking style that they later used on. A couple of songs on the White Album. I think John Lennon used it on Julia and maybe Dear Prudence. Donovan taught them how to do that because they had only used picks before. And then he said, well, let me show you how to, you know, finger pick. And apparently his style of finger picking is different than like a traditional proper way to do it.
Yeah, isn't that the way it goes?
Exactly. Yeah.
Honestly, most players are pretty unique to their style. Like, you can teach them some way and they'll figure out a way to do it, but it'll be their own way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I remember not too long ago stumbling upon a YouTube video on the proper way to hold the guitar pick. And I'm like, apparently you have to hold your thumb flat, and it's like, this is really, I'm not used, I can't do this. Yes.
So yeah. Sometimes it's best to do what feels natural.
Yeah. I think this is an interesting album. Like I said, it's an interesting snapshot into like the early parts of psychedelic music. And, you know, obviously over the next 2 or 3 years, it would really take off. And it's cool to hear his, you know, this approach. And I don't know if he was aware that he was sort of launching that sort of style, or if he was just making an album and, you know, wanted some cool sounds on it. But probably the latter, because, you know, usually, you know, artists and bands and musicians don't really know they're starting a trend. They just do what they do. And
not usually. Yeah. Sometimes in retrospect, they'll claim that they were, but usually it's pretty happenstance when things like that happen.
Yeah. Like I said, the second half of the album picked up a little more for me. I really liked that. The last song, Celeste, there were some cool sounds going on. Yeah, this is a really, really interesting album.
I heard some, you know, Jefferson Airplane in both The Trip and The Fat Angel, and they actually even referenced the Jefferson Airplane in The Fat Angel.
Yeah, and Jefferson Airplane actually covered one of the songs. Jefferson Airplane, I did cover The Fat Angel. They were admirers of each other, I suppose. So, yeah. So I guess that brings us to the question is, like, would you listen to this album again?
I think so. Yeah. Even though some of the stuff was a little bit, slower to pick up. I mean, maybe a second listen might, have things sort of like fall into place or something or whatever. But there's enough good stuff on here that I think it's worth another listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I'd probably give this another listen too. I mean, there's enough, you know, the complaints that I have are sort of minimal compared to what I like about it. It took me a little bit to get into it, but once I did, I thought, you know, especially in the second side, I thought it was really, really interesting. I think it'll probably be something I'll have to be in the mood for, but I would definitely listen to it again.
But Sunshine Superman and Season of the Witch, they often pop up in certainly in my rotation, stuff like that. Those are two songs that I'm pretty much always in the mood for stuff like that. So
yeah, those are really good songs. And I can see why they were chosen as the singles. Yeah. I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. And you can do that by going to the contact page at polyphonicpress.com/contact. And while you're there on the website, you can get lots of cool stuff. You can get old episodes of the podcast and lots of interesting stuff there. And if you want to help us out, you can do that by going to our Patreon at patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can get these episodes the day before they go live. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.